Welcome into the third episode of the fourth season of the Sabermetrics podcast hosted by the Charging Buffalo. My name is Bill. Alongside me, as always, is Walt. Walt, how you doing?
Doing pretty good. Looking forward to talking about the Sabres this August day. Just a few weeks away from the start of training camp and start of regular season just right around the corner.
Yep, it's exciting. This is a highly anticipated year, so I'm really looking forward to it. But instead of looking forward, we're actually going to look back, unfortunately, because Rick Jeanneret has passed. Everyone already knows the news, but I wanted to give my two cents, and I'll let you take it away. Got in from a really long drive that night, and essentially like right at the end of the trip is when that news came out. And it wasn't overly emotional or anything like that, but I was obviously sad just like everyone else. But that one hurt. That stung. You know, I kind of sat there in the car once I was done driving and you just kind of like think back, and it just kind of brings you back down to earth, you know, listening to him as a kid and the Empire Sports Network and being so excited to watch those games. And, you know, it was tough. It was really tough. I didn't have anything really prepared to say. And now that I'm here, I don't really have the words to kind of convey how I'm feeling, but it just really, you know, it brings it back down to earth. So many great memories listening to him. He was, you know, the excitement as a kid, just hearing him get wound up. And there's so many great calls that you can go back to. And yeah, I mean, now that I'm actually faced with talking about it instead of just thinking it to myself, it's tough to put into words. So Walt, is there anything that you wanted to maybe say? I just wanted to say, you know, rest in peace, Rick Jeanneret. You're an absolute legend. You know, as every fan has, you know, often imitated, but he will never, ever be duplicated. There's only one Rick Jeanneret. What a legendary career, life, and you know, he touched the hearts of many. So Walt, any words?
Yeah, I mean, I think you just look at or just think about any Sabres memory you have, and usually Rick Jeanneret's voice comes along with those memories. He's just such an important figure for any Sabres fan, really for the hockey community as a whole. Just a great person too. I mean, he's pretty much the definition of what you'd expect someone in the Buffalo Sabres organization to be. I mean, he represents the Buffalo Sabres, and I think just looking back on it and thinking about like those Tuesday night games against the Atlanta Thrashers, like if he was announcing that game, like he'd make it fun and entertaining to watch. I mean, he really just changed the game in that regard. I mean, he made any single Sabres game fun to watch. I mean, even those 2013, 2014 years that were just brutal, he was still there announcing all those games, making some not so exciting hockey pretty exciting. And it's definitely going to be sad not to have him here anymore. And I'm a little upset that he kind of ended his career as a Sabres announcer with some not so great hockey. I mean, at least it got to end off on that Mittelstadt overtime goal. Yeah. And at least he was kind of here to see the Sabres on the rise last season. So, I really wish we would have gotten that Stanley Cup call from him, but I know up above when the Sabres win the Stanley Cup, I mean, there's going to be a Stanley Cup cult coming down from heaven on that Sabres Stanley Cup parade someday. So, yeah, just a huge piece of the Sabres community and definitely a devastating loss.
Yeah, it still stings, you know, kind of. I was okay, but now that we're talking about it again, it's kind of bringing some stuff up. So, you know, we're going to move on, even though I will never move on from Rick Jeanneret. It's just never going to be a thing. I will say, you know, trying to keep things a little bit more positive and light, you know, the current play-by-play guy, Dan Dunleavy, is a great, I think he does a great job. Seems like an awesome guy from everything I hear, and I think he does a great job. So we are lucky to go from someone like Rick Jeanneret to Dan Dunleavy as well. It's almost like going from Hasek to Miller. Just two great guys, very good at their job, very passionate about being, you know, part of the Sabres organization and the Sabres community. And, you know, especially for Sabres fans, we know the gravity that kind of carries and the weight that carries. So yeah, I think it's just, you know, one more, I guess maybe tiny little moment of silence here for Rick Jeanneret. But legendary career, great guy, and we will miss you for sure. Okay, so moving on, you know, trying to keep it a little light now. We are going into a couple of transactions, I guess you would say. One being a trade. That is Ilya Lyubushkin is headed to Anaheim, or I guess has headed to Anaheim, for a fourth-round pick. I forgot to check the year on that. So while Walt is commentating about his thoughts of the trade, I'm going to actually look exactly which year it is because I forget.
Yeah, I mean, it really makes sense that a guy like Lyubushkin was moved because, like we talked about last episode, someone from that blue line had to have been moved to just really get a legal roster by the time the season starts, just so you're not kind of running around trying to make trades, trying to make waiver moves like that week before the season. So it's a trade that I think a lot of people kind of saw coming. They really may not have been sure which defenseman would be the one to be traded first, but it ended up being Lyubushkin, gets traded to Anaheim. I really don't know what they're doing out in Anaheim. I think the way they draft versus the way they're building their team now are like two very different things. I mean, I know they have a new GM. I believe it's Pat Verbeek now. And they're kind of building it to, like, just like an old guy hockey type team. I mean, they signed Radko Gudas, they signed Alex Killorn, and they have so many prospects that play a fun brand of hockey coming up, like Olin Zellwiger. You got Pavel Mintyukov. Then you got guys like Zegras at the NHL level already. So in terms of Anaheim, I just really don't know what they're doing. So, I mean, you could do worse than Lyubushkin for a fourth-round pick, but I'm not sure if they're building their team the right way.
I mean, if your team isn't going to be good, make them exciting. So you have a lot of young talent, and you might want to, honestly, with like Gudas, Killorn, and Lyubushkin, you might want to protect those young guys. That could be part of it. But it's also like, you know, you want to get some butts in seats, have guys throw massive hits and get in some fights, and that'll, you know, at least bring some people, and you have enough talent to maybe, you know, lose 5-4, 6-4, stuff like that. So, you know, you'll still get a high draft pick, and you'll still, you know, get some fans that are loving what's going on the ice, even if it isn't necessarily winning. Just take it from a Sabres fan that gets real old real quick, the patience of losing night in and night out and forcing yourself to watch a 10 p.m. game out in Calgary on a Thursday night is, it'll lose its pizzazz a bit, but I guess I don't really have to worry about that. They have to worry about the early games. But can you imagine having like 4 p.m. starts when your team's out on the East Coast? That'd be weird.
That's almost worse than 10 p.m. in some ways.
Yeah. I mean, at the same time, game's over by like dinner time, and you have the rest of the night for yourself. So
yeah.
Whatever. Anyway, another transaction like we were talking about, this one has nothing to do. Well, I shouldn't say nothing to do with the Sabres, but very little to do with the Sabres, I guess you'd say, is Austin Matthews signing a four-year. Oh, my God. By the way, I forgot to backtrack on this. It was a 2025 fourth-round pick. So, said I was going to look it up. I did. I just never said anything, so good for me. Crushing it out here already, boys.
2025 fourth round's looking amazing this so far.
Yeah, we're incredibly excited. I mean, I don't know. Got something for him, I guess, and they signed him as a free agent, so I guess that's just like a found draft pick. Good for them. I don't know. Anyway, Austin Matthews signs for $13,250,000 a year. Let's just go that way. It's for 4 years. At the end of it, does it say what age he will be when he is done? Not necessarily, but 4 years, and he is how many years old now? 25, so he'll be 29 when this is done. What did you think of both the term length and the price per year? Full no-move contract for all 4 years, from what I'm seeing from Cap Friendly, so there's our source. What did you think? It actually looks like his salary itself is just all signing bonuses each year. So it's like his base salary is, the highest it gets is $900,000 in a year, and it's all just signing bonuses. So I know that's how they kind of want to do Toronto stuff. I don't fully understand that whole side of things, to be completely honest. So Do you have any, you know, thoughts on the whole front loading signing bonuses instead of, you know, the base salary or whatever it might be?
I know Toronto loves doing that. I'm not really sure why exactly, but there's got to be something behind it.
Is it pay the signing bonus and then trade the person if you really need to trade them, and that'll help you trade the asset? I know he has no move clause, but if things really, you know, tank, and then Matthews can like decide where he's going, and then maybe they just pay that, the whole we didn't pay Ryan O'Reilly July 1st kind of thing, and that's why you got lesser of a deal kind of thing. Like, you pay that, you get a better deal. Am I barking up the right tree at all?
I honestly have no idea. Okay, it's just good. Like, I don't even bother looking at the NHL CBA. I mean, it's as bad as like the NBA salary stuff, but it's up there being pretty bad and not straightforward.
Pretty convoluted, yeah.
I think that contract, though, it's something that Toronto obviously had to get done. I think the term is interesting that he went 4 years again. I'm kind of surprised more players don't, especially in that elite category, don't go for those shorter term deals. I guess the NHL, a lot of the players are really like risk averse in terms of injuries and whatnot, but we're seeing the amount of money that these guys are getting just by taking short term deals. Like, Matthews signed that 8-year deal, it probably would have been for what his 4-year deal is for. Now he's getting like an extra $8 million or so just for taking the 4-year deal initially instead of an 8-year deal. So it always kind of like befuddles me why more players in the Austin Matthews caliber, or even a little bit lower caliber, like guys like Tage Thompson or Barkov or other guys, just don't take like those 4-year deals rather than signing on for 8 right out of their ELC.
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting play, because he is done when he's 29. So, I mean, I guess that's when he could sign. I guess it would be, if he wouldn't sign with Toronto, it would be 7 years, correct? And that would be 8 years, I mean, if he signs with Toronto. I mean,
he could still do like 7 or 8 years at his age too. Someone will definitely give it to him.
I think that could be the thought process there, is like, if I go any further, I'm into my 30s. And people, once you get the 3 in front of your name, people start to be a little bit more hesitant, especially when it comes to long-term deals.
Yeah,
I'm grasping here, but that could be part of it. Interesting. Yeah, I just the money. It's like, yeah, it makes sense. The guy fills the net. He's a very, very good player, and you can say what you want about the playoffs. Like, you know, he's a very good player for the 82 games in the regular season. That's for sure. And then playoffs is playoffs kind of thing. So I guess the thing that I thought of, and it's just like the Sabres brain, and you know, how does this affect the Sabres legacy, the whole like LeBron thing. I looked at the cap hit and I was like, for essentially $1 million more, just a little bit under $1 million more cap hit wise per year, you can have both Tage Thompson and Dylan Cousins. I know it's just like, yeah, look, it's Austin Matthews. He's one of the premier goal scorers in the league, but it's like, it's also pretty nice. It's same thing with Josh Allen. Whenever, you know, people, or whenever quarterbacks are getting signed and stuff, or you know, even some of these guys that are signing deals in the NHL this year, where we're like, holy crap, Tage is only making this. And at some point, I feel like we will say, and Dylan is only making this. Like, I think he's already worth it, but I feel like it's going to continue to increase. What would you rather have? Would you rather have Austin Matthews and essentially $1 million in the bank for like maybe another player to add on there? Or would you rather have Tage Thompson and Dylan Cousins?
Right now, I'd probably have to say Austin Matthews. I think my answer could change after the season, depending on like what Dylan Cousins looks like and if he could be more of a complete player. But having two centers that are just close to being abysmal at defense. I won't say they're the worst, but they're definitely pretty bad at defense. I think I'd rather get like the complete guy with an elite shot in Austin Matthews. Just I just feel safer with that at this point in time. Okay. But like I said, I think my answer could change at the end of the season.
So you have someone that's a, he can only be on the ice so much kind of person, at least when it comes to like building a team in that sense. And that's where I would take Tage and Dylan, just because it also fills out those two. But yeah, I mean, for sure, Austin Matthews is the better player if you stack each person against him. But I don't know. I think that's where we differ. We finally disagree on something. I was thinking about that earlier, actually. I was like, man, we have zero controversy. Like,
yeah, we never disagree on anything.
Never disagree, which, like, it's not really planned. Like, if we disagree, I think we would just say it. I don't think anything you've said where I was just like, I disagree, but for the sake of the show, I'm not going to say anything. I don't really think I've felt that, at least that I can remember. So there you go. I think that was the first one. You know, I'm proud of us. I'm glad you guys were all around here to hear that. So
yeah, it just took 3 years.
Yeah, there you have it. And you know what? Walt's actually so mad he's going to move to Boston because of it. So yeah, he decided to pack up and
there
you go. Yeah, Walt's out of here at the end of the week to Boston. He is going over to the dark side. So chirp him in the comments or chat or whatever. Not chat. This isn't live streamed. Thank God it's not live streamed. Oh my gosh. Let's move on, shall we? Next topic, we actually do have a little bit of an outline. I was listening to our last episode just to kind of hear the audio. I was testing some stuff out and we wung it, and you could tell. You could definitely tell. So this is going to be Walt's bread and butter here. Pramin's pipeline rankings have come out. Some Sabres have been mentioned on that. Corey Pronman of The Athletic. Unless he's changed, to my knowledge, I believe he's of The Athletic. And
oh, yeah, he's still there.
He is still there. And he came out with his pipeline rankings. Walt, who's up there? And what were your thoughts on it?
Yeah, so basically what Corey Pronman did was he ranked all players under 23 on each team and ranked the organization. Sabres came in third. Anaheim was number one. Chicago was two. Buffalo was three. So I'm just going to read off Pramin's, we'll do his top 19 rankings for the Sabres under 23 pipeline. So Dylan Cousins at one, Owen Power at two.
Okay, hold on. Let's start there. Like, let's take this slow. We're going to scrutinize this.
We'll walk through it.
Okay. Number one, Dylan Cousins. Number two, Owen Power. Okay. Where do we start there? I mean, what do you just think of that in general? I'm trying to think of like trying to get into nitty gritty and I just can't think of anything at the moment. But what do you just think of that at face value? Because I go Owen Power. I think he just looked that comfortable as a rookie.
Yeah.
Defenseman in the NHL. I mean, Dylan Cousins is great. This is nothing against him, but Owen Power is just like a freak. He's just a freak. And it's awesome.
Yeah, I've got to say the same. I mean, we saw Dylan Cousins' his rookie year. He was in that, like, awful, like, 2020-21 season where really everybody played bad. But just comparing their rookie years, I think Owen Power was on a different level. I believe they're the same age, too. So, and the fact that I think it's Dahlin that maybe, like, messed with people's perception of Owen Power a bit, because I think if Dahlin wasn't here, they'd be like, oh, Owen Power, number one defenseman. He's got that potential. He's pretty much already a number one defenseman now. People would be saying stuff like that, and I think he'd easily be number one in these pipeline rankings.
Yeah, I don't – okay, I was actually – for a second, I was going to be like, where's Dahlin? He is 23. I thought he was still 22 for a second, so happy birthday to him. So that's why he's not on there. But yeah, I mean, it's just, I don't know. I think you're right. There's just something about the perception of Owen Power where he's just steady too. Like, he wasn't super dynamic offensively when it comes to point totals. And like, his shot is still has something left to be desired, which is still a good shot. But like, if he starts clapping shots, it's over for the NHL. Like, if he starts putting up 10 plus goals a season, like, he's already going to rack up plenty of assists. I don't know. Like, Dylan Cousins, like, I still think there's more runway for him, where his own power, he's already made it up that runway. And he's still, like, I still think they have the same amount. I'm not saying, like, he's more high floor, low ceiling. I think he just has a high floor and he has a high ceiling, whereas Dylan Cousins has a little bit lower of a floor. And I think his ceiling is maybe a little bit lower than Powers, if that's fair to say. So that's where I'm at. I would probably put Owen Power at one. So unless you have anything else to add, let's go through the next couple here.
All right, I'll just do the next three. We got Jack Quinn at three, Zach Benson at four, and J.J. Paterka at five.
Wow, the Matt Savoy hate is real. I think Paterka is where he should be, unless you put Savoy there. But the Benson versus Quinn thing, I really do like Jack Quinn. And as someone that totally, at the time, did not understand the draft pick, and just it was more just like a general hatred towards the Sabres at that point. Let's be completely honest. I mean, he seems like a great kid. It was nothing ever against him. But, like, let's be honest. Like, the Sabres thought we needed a play driver because Tage hadn't broken out yet. So we all thought Marco Rossi was a better one. And, unfortunately, he had, like, a really horrible bout with COVID. So, you know, there's that. Which I'm not trying to say anything different. Like, I was wrong. I was wrong about Jack Quinn. I'm not trying to, you know, make excuses for it. But that was the thinking at the time. I guess I just don't know as much about Jack Benson. Oh, my God. That's not great. I'm going to take a sip of tea here. You know what I was trying to talk about is Zach Benson. I think I would put... Shit, that's tough. Oh, man, I'm struggling here. What would you go with? Because I'm just wasting people's time at this point.
I'm just thinking about this, and I think I would... Owen Power at one still. I would maybe think to put Zach Benson at two. I know, like, wow. Cousins is a lot more established, and I know Quinn is more established as well. He's already played NHL games, obviously, but I just think the ceiling with Zach Benson is so high.
Okay.
I don't really think anybody outside of Power, like, kind of possesses that. Like, see a guy like Benson, and he's just good at everything.
I think the thing what we're doing right now, I'm sorry to interrupt. I kind of thought that was like a point for me to jump in. So good for me.
No, you could definitely jump in.
I think we're also going more based off potential as to where they are at right now, because that's more what you're looking with prospects. Yeah, of course it is about where they are at right now, but like they can be a little less skilled or a little less developed or a little bit more raw, but it's the potential that we see in them and the general consensus, because everyone has a different perspective on potential. But I think that's where you're at. And I guess I didn't fully understand where Zach Benson's ceiling was in comparison to the other two. So that's interesting that you mentioned Benson. I know you were kind of going off on stuff, so if you wanted to finish your thought there.
Yeah, you know, I really just think Benson, it's just like, I mean, you look at those fun offensive WHL forwards, you got guys like Braden Point, players like that. And obviously Benson's a little more higher end as a prospect. And you just kind of see like those traits in Benson's game that you see in a lot of other elite small forwards. And he's great defensively too. Like maybe one of the best defensive forwards in the draft. So I think you're dealing with a pretty fun player here. And I'm really excited to see him in the upcoming prospect tournament and training camp. And he obviously showed off really well during the summer development camp and the scrimmage. So I think if he really impresses in training camp and the preseason, I think the hype train is going to be off the charts for Zach Benson in Buffalo.
I agree. Yeah, I think people already say like he is a better prospect than Savoy. But to say he's a better, you know, like under 23 prospect than Cousins and Quinn is high praise. I pray. So keep an eye out for Zach Benson, according to Sabermetrics himself. Let's move on to the next next few there. I'm assuming Savoy's in the next one. Let me see if I can guess the next one too. Savoy. It's got to be Levi, right? Savoy, Levi. Weisbach. No, I'm just kidding. Couldn't help myself. I don't even think he qualifies, but it's one of those two. So what's the next three? I know two of them, obviously, but.
So we got Yuri Kulik at six.
Oh, duh.
Noah Osland at seven. And Matt Savoy at eight.
Is Levi nine?
No. he's even lower.
Goalies are in the reasons. Right? Okay.
They're in it.
Jeez. No, Usland. Yeah, like he just always comes up as the trade bait. He just always does. Like it's just he isn't Savoy because he isn't what that high pick, and you just don't necessarily want to give away so close to drafting him. And then you have Jiri Kulik, who came in and tore it up. And why would you want to trade someone like that? And my thought process is just, just assume that they were drafted flip-flopped, where Uslan was picked, just assume it was Kulik and the other way around, and boom, that's still a really good first round from them. What do you see from Noah Uslan that would warrant that high of one? Of course, he's a good player, but he has a skill, obviously, and not really doubting that. I think it's more the complete game that everyone is a little bit more hesitant on. But to be fair, you can say that about a lot of the Sabres forwards prospects. So do you agree with his placement of where Noah Östlund is, and where do you think his ceiling is, and just everything about the player? Because I think people need to learn a little bit more about him than the others.
Well, I can certainly see the argument for Noah Östlund over a guy like Savoy. I don't think that would be my personal ranking. I think the issue that a lot of people have with Savoy after his last season in the WHL is he creating this offense just through speed, being faster than everyone else in WHL, and just his pace of play? Or is it through dynamic ability? And will that dynamic ability he shows a little bit of at the WHL level translate to the NHL? So I think a lot of people forget. I think Zach Benson, I think just because he looks like he's 12 years old, people think he's like the smaller forward. But Savoy's actually smaller. I mean, he's only 5'9". And a 5'9 guy that lacks dynamic ability at the NHL level will kind of struggle to carve out a role. So I think that's one of the main reasons why he's a bit lower in some of these prospect rankings from the national media guys. So I think with Noah Östlund, you're just getting a guy who's good at everything. I think you maybe want him to play inside a little bit more. He sticks to the perimeter a little bit, but he was an 18, 19-year-old playing pro hockey the past few years, so that's a little understandable. But he has shown improvement in that regard. His shot looks better too. It's almost looking like a strength. And we're finally going to be able to see him in the SHL this season. He was playing in Sweden's second tier last season. And we're finally going to get to see him healthy. And he ended the last season battling through an injury for the past few months, like two different injuries as well. Didn't see him in development camp because he's still battling through an injury. So if he's healthy to start next year and has a great SHL season, I think you're looking at a guy that projects very well into an NHL lineup role in the very near future.
Who would you say is the best defensively of the three? Zach Benson, Noah Östlund, and Matt Savoy. Because I feel like Jiri Kulik is just like a step ahead of those three anyway. So he would be the easiest answer. So of those three.
I'd say for me, it'd definitely be Zach Benson, just because he has such a commitment to the other side of the puck that for a lot of these players, it's really just that motivation aspect to play well defensively. That's the most important thing. And Zach Benson has that in droves. And usually a guy in their draft year, you'd think they'd be trying to just load up the stat sheet, put up big numbers, not pay as much attention to the defensive end at times, because a lot of NHL teams will overlook that. But Benson has so much attention to detail defensively. I mean, he's not a guy that loses the puck and just kind of drifts away. He'll lose the puck, stop, win the puck back. Always winning the puck for his line mates. He's kind of an unreal player defensively, so it's going to be interesting to see how that work rate and how that talent with stripping pucks off of sticks translates to the NHL level, because he was just fantastic defensively in the WHL, and his team just dominated every single time he's on the ice because of that.
That's good to hear. That's good to hear. Okay. If you could you recap Pronman's rankings to this point so we can remind everyone, and then we'll move on to the next ones?
All right, so we have Cousins 1, Power at 2, Quinn at 3, Benson at 4, Paterka at 5, Kulik at 6, Östlund at 7, Savoy at 8.
Okay. All right.
So,
And we're going to 1 to 19, you said?
we'll end it at 12 because 12 is so shocking that we may have to.
Okay.
We'll be talking about it for a while.
Right.
So we got Peyton Krebs at 9, Anton Wahlberg at 10, Maxime Strawbeck at 11, and Devin Levi at 12.
There's justifications behind his picking of these people, right? Do you have his reasoning behind picking number 12? I don't know if you have that or not.
I could pull it up real quick. I mean, based on what he says about number 12, like you'd be like, how is this guy ranked number 12? All right, so I got it right here. It says Levi was again a top player in college hockey, even if he didn't repeat the ridiculous numbers he posted. He then turned pro and had a good short stint in the NHL for Buffalo. Levi is a very quick and intelligent goalie who showed in college that he has the ability to steal a game. He reads the play at a very high level, and when the puck is moving laterally, he has the quickness in his lower half to get across. He plays aggressively when he needs to and competes well in net. With Levi, it has always come down to his frame and whether he'll be big enough to be an NHL goalie. I think he will be, but I'm hesitant to tag him as more than a tandem type because of that risk variable. He's done nothing more than prove people wrong for the last few years, so I wouldn't be shocked if he developed into a legitimate starter. And that description is good enough to rank him behind
It
Maxime Strawbeck.
one away from the teens. Thanks, Corey. I mean, I love Peyton Krebs, I really do, but that's where I would put him. And then, like, I don't have any problems after that, but I would put him at 9. That's fair. That's fair. Like, I think we're, and it's again, it's a potential thing for me at least. I think Peyton Krebs actually does have a lot more potential than people actually give him credit for. It's been tough for him to carve out a role. They asked him to do something where he hasn't necessarily had to do it in his career because he was always the best player on his team. And I think he did remarkably well from where he was the year before. I mean, he was a pylon out there defensively. And this is coming from someone that if I was in the same position, yeah, complete pylon. So like, but it was tough. And understandably, he was a young forward trying to play in the NHL, and that wasn't his game in the past again because he never had to really play that way. It's like Ben Simmons in a jumper. Never learned it, never tried because he didn't need it. Peyton Krebs didn't need to play like lockdown defense. He would just outscore the other team when he was a kid, probably. So again, that is understandable. Can't hold that against him. And then on top of that, you can't hold it against him. And then he comes out and he dramatically, in my opinion, improves. I don't know if the numbers specifically, warrant me saying dramatically improved, but I think he's a good prospect. But Devin Levi at 12, what are we doing? What are we doing here? Is it a goalie bias? It has to be a height bias. Who's that freaking massive goalie? It's like his name's like Matt Snaregard
Oh,
or
Matt
whatever.
Sogard on
Sogard,
the
thank you.
Senators.
Senators, yeah. It's like, what is he, like number three on the list or something for him? Because he's a monster. Like, is that
I
what
don't
we're doing
even.
again? Nathan Lewin? Lewin?
Oh,
Is
Nate,
it?
Kelowna Ice legend.
Yeah. Unfortunately, had like a million concussions, and that's scary, dude. That's just frightening, and I'm glad he's. I frankly, I'm glad he's not playing for the sake of that. But he was like 6'7". I was like, yeah, there you go. Linus Ullmark, big goalie. Portillo, big goalie. Good luck down there in L.A., loser.
Tobias Lennonen too, the other
Big goalie.
Sabres draft pick. He's also a big goalie.
Is he drafted? Or is he on that ranking in there?
He
Let's
is.
quickly run through the rest of them. We probably won't even talk about them because I'm so mad about the Levi thing, but.
All right, so we have Nadeau at 13, McCarthy at 14, Rozane at 15.
Jeez.
We got
Goddamn.
Nuchev at 16, Ryan Johnson at 17,
Okay.
Scott Ratzlaff at 18, Pultipoff at 19, and then honorable mentions Lennonen, Bidema, and Novikov.
I think that Rosine one's pretty interesting.
Yeah, I know. It's
That's Okay, I didn't think we were going to talk about any more of them, but it's like the Jura Kulik thing when I totally overlooked him. Totally overlooked Isaac Rosen. Rosen, excuse me. I guess that's how you say it. I want to be correct.
It's so many different pronunciations. I've heard with some Swedish names, I just kind of just freestyle it.
Yeah, that's fair enough. You know me and last names. Anyway, we're going, what, 15 for him? I don't agree. I just... It's just a gut feeling. I don't really have any other opinions besides like Levi's too low, and I think Rosen is too low, and that's where I'm just gonna leave it. You know,
I'd say the same for me. I'd probably put him at like 11 or so, because I mean Levi would obviously be in the top 10 for me, so that pushes Krebs down to 10,
which is fine. And I think that's good.
Yeah,
that's good.
It comes down to Wahlberg versus Rosen, and I think that question really just comes down to like potential, because you have a guy like Wahlberg who's like very raw. I think he's even a July birthday, so he just turned 18 in July, and he's could get big minutes at his SHL club this year, versus a guy like Rosen who kind of struggled his rookie year, wasn't getting a lot of ice time. His second year, he kind of progressed, but he still hasn't put up like those huge AHL numbers, so... I think Wahlberg versus Rosen would be an interesting debate. Yeah.
We will have that debate. Let's have that debate later on in the season if we can remember. because, that's an interesting one. So there you go. There's Prominence Pipeline rankings. A few interesting ones in there, a few ones that we disagree with, but there you go. Makes for good content. Appreciate you, Corey. Half the time I swear that people that put out these rankings are like just trying to, you know, he should have put like on power at 5 and then, but you know, get double the clicks because people were just reading.
I feel like the Levi one might even be worse. I mean, I'm just thinking about tough. Levi's first game in Buffalo with like the game pretty much sold out just because he was playing. They're chanting his name. Like, could you imagine that same reaction for Maxime Strawbeck's debut for like 14 minutes of ice time, 4 block shots? Like,
I mean, Levi played like 8 games in a row or whatever it was, and like the Sabres playoff race and stuff like that, and then they like the only reason he stopped playing is because it was like a back-to-back and he had already played like 8 in a row, and they're like, all right, we can't do this to the poor kid, because like I didn't think it was gonna last more than like 3-4 games, but they just kept riding him, and then at they essentially got forced to sit him. So
yeah,
hey,
and he like that Florida game that was like that massive playoff implication game, like he really didn't lose the Sabres that game. I think the offense lost in that game. He was played out of his mind that game.
I remember like the first like 4 goals that he let in, all of them were either totally weren't his fault or just like a weird fluke.
Yeah, I mean, like, he's got to get used to like not having any backdoor defense at all in Buffalo. Like, you just always got to be watching your backdoor with these defensemen.
Yeah, that's definitely like improving the defense is going to be big, especially for someone like Devin Levi who has to play so aggressive because of his frame. So there you go, Pronman. I gave you some props for maybe ranking him so low because of his frame. So, it's not really the same. I was going to say this is kind of related. It's not. It's not even close to related, so I don't know why I tried saying that. You know what? We're going to do this one last. The last topic we were going to do is what we're going to do now, which is if you had to start a franchise right now and you had 2 choices, you have Rasmus Dahlin and you have Owen Power, who are you taking and why?
I think the answer for me... After this past season, I think it has to be Rasmus Dahlin. If you asked me the same question August last year, I think I would have been a little crazy with it and gone with Owen Power. I just think with what you saw from Dahlin last season, we really saw those defensive plays shore up really just through improved retrieval rate and stuff like that. Just a lot more confidence, too. He's got that swagger in his game. A lot more efficient offensively. He finally broke into that echelon of like just those top tier defensemen, just guys that are so good that they dominate in all aspects of the game. Like those guys like Kale McCarr, Adam Fox, Heiskanen, just those high end guys. I think Dahlin always had that potential because obviously he was probably the greatest defensive prospect of this generation. And I think he's finally starting to reach that potential. So I think just for that, I have to go with Dahlin. And I don't really think that's a slight on Power, just because that's just how good I think Rasmus Dahlin's going to be. I think the concern I saw with Power is obviously the defensive play. That's something that has to improve in order for him to break into that upper echelon of NHL defensemen. But I think the thing with Owen Power, I just think he's like so much more smart with the way he sees patterns offensively than a guy like Dahlin. Not saying Dahlin's not strong in that regard, but I just think Owen Power, I think he's just on a different level of just the way he sees the game. Like, he really doesn't have to have the puck on his stick to drive offense. And we saw that one goal against St. Louis. I believe he got a primary assist and may have even been the one to score it, but the entire play was just spurred by him moving around the ice, forcing other guys to move and opening up space for his teammates. And just seeing that from a teenage defenseman is just unreal. And I think the fact that we're having this discussion about two Sabres defensemen, both guys' number one defense potential, is just pretty cool.
Yeah, I mean, like, any kind of, like, quote-unquote, like, slight to the other guy is just, like, really, what are we talking about here? Because it's, like, it's so minor. They're both of them are just so incredibly good. I think, I mean, I agree. I would take Dahlin. But for the sake of argument, so I can't. It's close. I mean, it is close. I'm not saying it's, like, light years away or anything like that. So, but for the sake of argument, devil's advocate kind of thing, I will pretend like I'm taking Owen Power. Okay, so me, Owen Power, I'm taking Owen Power. And I'm taking him because, okay, think. I didn't think this through, actually. Because he has a longer runway, and he has a bigger frame, and I really think that he can end up better defensively than Dahlin, as long as pucks stop going in off his massive feet. Because that happened like 4 times this year, and I felt terrible for the kid. He would just be standing there and just get a puck rifled off his foot, and next thing you know, it's in the back of the net. I think he could be better than Dahlin defensively, and I think he can get close enough offensively where it warrants starting your team with Owen Power. Bam, there you go. There's your devil's advocate thing. Again, I would take Dahlin, so I don't actually truly necessarily believe that, but it's just such a nice luxury to have. It really is.
It's kind of unreal because, I mean, Sabres don't really have the, like, a rich history of NHL defensemen. Even like the last glory days, like 06, 07, 05.
They were just like steady, like, players. They were just like,
yeah, they just had a bunch of guys.
Yeah, solid. Actually, you know what? Here's a question. We do have a couple more topics. And to be completely honest, we are going to talk a little bit more about RJ just because I feel like we didn't do it enough justice, and I kind of got over my feelings over it. I was starting to feel a little bit, trying to be, open with the people that, take their time and spend what do we have? Probably minute 45 at this point to hear us. It's tough. It's not an easy thing to talk about. But I feel like, maybe to wrap up the show, we'll talk a little bit more about him. Matthias Samuelsson is a player that makes just slightly over $4 million a year. He's also someone that plays a game pretty tough. There's a lot of big hits and blocks a lot of shots. And what comes with that is injuries. For you, what I hate to say it, something that comes to mind, Zach Bogosian. You pencil him in to be a big factor in your defense, and he is constantly out. I'm not blaming him. It's just that's what happened. What do you think? Let's do this. Per season, how many games does Matthias Samuelsson have to play in? This is just playing and not talking about his performance, to play in to justify his $4.2 million a season. Because if he plays all of them and he plays very well, that contract looks great. If he misses, 50% of the games, 40% of the games, that's... It might not hurt this season, but that's going to be tough. And you start racking up these injuries, you would assume the susceptibility is going to come up too. So it's just, is that a concern of yours? And it's through no fault of his. It's something that the Sabres frankly need, but it comes with the territory. He plays a rougher game and he's going to get injured. I wish he didn't. I wish he was playing all 82 games, just hockey. What do you think? are you worried about that? How many games do you think? Because I'm around like the 60 game, 65 game mark out of 82. I don't know if I'm barking up the right. People might completely disagree with that. I really haven't fully thought that through, but I was looking at his contract. I'm like, that's a long time at $4.2 million. I personally think he has the skill to justify that 100%. I think he brings something that the Sabres just don't have and you want to have with a guy like Dahlin and a guy like Power. But it could be a detriment if he's constantly injured too, which again, I hope just does not happen.
It's an interesting question because I wonder if they give him the same long-term contract knowing what his injuries would be like last summer. Just because I don't really think he's a guy that you had to lock up that long term. I don't think he'd be someone that would be walking if he still had like RFA year left. I'd imagine he'd probably still sign another deal in Buffalo. Yeah. You kind of have a clear picture of what his NHL game looks like. I think the injury is definitely a concern. I think even look at a guy like Jacob Chychrun too. He's someone whose trade value ended up being a lot lower than a lot of people thought it would be, and I wonder if his injury history plays a role in that. Even after he got traded to Ottawa, he got injured again in Ottawa and missed a few games for them. So I think, you know, the best ability is availability. I sound like a 75-year-old football coach, but that's true with a lot of players suffering with injuries. I mean, if you're paying these guys big money, obviously, there's LTIR and other loopholes to get around their salaries, but it's not like every team has a replaceable player making the same salary just sitting in the wings waiting to come in. It's definitely
especially in not defense great for the Sabres.
Yeah, defense too. With it's kind of a weak spot for the Sabres team in terms of depth, and even the long-term depth doesn't look that great either.
You'll have those three, but beyond that, and you'll have like Ryan Johnson, I guess, for a couple of years and stuff like that. But that's tough, you know.
There's probably going to be a lot of names that aren't currently on the roster that are filling out the Sabres defense like 3 years from now. I just not a huge fan of their prospect pool on defense. I think Novikov may be interesting, but I think he's got a low ceiling.
Yeah.
Lindgren is a guy who.
It's tough to tell.
Makes it to the NHL. Yeah. I would not bet on it just because I don't think he progressed last year, and I don't even think he progressed in his draft year that much. And then Johnson, I think he can make it, but a lower ceiling guy. So it's definitely going to be interesting. I could see why they wanted Samuelson long term just because of that lack of depth. But I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see how he does this year. The team struggled at times when he was hurt. I think that was a combination of a bunch of factors, but it's going to be interesting to see how his health plays out this season and the upcoming seasons.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's kind of leads us in. Oh, bang, segue. Look at me go, Walt. Leads us in to our next topic, and we're just going to talk about like some players that have a lot of pressure on them. And I think Samuelson has more than people would initially give credit to. But the more you think about it, I think he has a lot more pressure on him just to stay healthy and to keep up that level of play, because that is a long-term commitment that the Sabres gave to him. I'm happy that they did at this point, but that could, you know, could be singing a different tune in a couple months if he's out again long-term, stuff like that. Again, it's not his fault, but the fact of the matter is he's locked up long-term and he's going to be making a decent buck for that. So it's interesting. I still support it, but, you know, he brings an element to the Sabres that they don't have. So I don't know. Take that with what you will. I don't think I said that right, but we're going to go with it. Let's see here. First one I'm going to start off with on the pressure gauge. We're going to go 1 to 10. 10 is the lid's about to blow off. 1 is you're good. We're good. We're chilling. First one, Jordan Greenway.
I'd say for him, I'd go 7, just because he doesn't have that many more years left on his contract. He really hasn't shown the offense that he showed early on in his time in Minnesota. I mean, his offense has kind of been like bottom tier. I think you just want a little more from him, and he probably really hopes a guy like Granato, who coached him in juniors, is a guy that could get that out of him, but I'm gonna go seven, just because I think he'll always have a place in the NHL, just with his frame and size, even though he may not be the most physical player. But I think if he wants to make more money than he's making now, he needs to show just a lot more offense than he currently is.
If I end up disagreeing or want to add anything, I will, but I agree with that assessment, so we will move on to Peyton Krebs.
Peyton Krebs, I'm going to go nine. I think, ooh. I was just thinking about this earlier, just with the Sabres forward group over the next few years. I mean, Skinner will still be here, Tuck, Thompson. You got Cousins, Quinn, Paterka. You got Kulik, Savoy, Benson coming up. You got Mittelstadt, who had a fantastic season. Mm-hmm. Then you're left with an 11 and 12 spot. That's probably not where Peyton Krebs imagined himself to be after being a top prospect in the 2019 NHL draft. So
yeah.
I'm going to go nine for him just because he has a lot of pressure on him to be able to show he's more than a bottom six forward, because bottom six forwards aren't really the guys that get the money, especially undersized bottom six forwards. So I think he's got a decent amount of pressure on him. I think he's probably a candidate to be like a Tyson Jost type guy that was a higher pick for Colorado, but ended up bouncing around a bunch of other teams in a bottom six role. I think he could be a candidate for that if he's not able to stick around as like a purely defensive forward.
Okay. I'd probably go 7, 8 in that range. Maybe not 9, but he definitely has pressure on him for sure. I'm interested. This season's going to be a big teller of like where they deploy him, what they actually think of him, or where he, you know, kind of like earned his ice time kind of thing. And be interested to see, maybe you hate to say it, but if like one of the top six guys goes down, see if maybe he's the first one that's inserted into the top six. Next one we're going to go with, what's the next one on the list here? Casey Mittelstadt.
Casey Mittelstadt, I believe he's in a contract year, so I'm going to go with a 7 for him. I do think the way he ended last season will always be in people's minds, even when the contract negotiations come up. I think he's at the point this season where it's really just situational, where he could probably just beg a guy like Don Granato, just like, please put me in the top six because it'll make me just so much more money on my next contract. Because I think if he's up there with talent, he's such a great puck support player and playmaker at this point in his career that I think he'd be pretty close to a 70-80 point center.
Ooh.
If placed in a top role all year. And those guys make a lot more than a 35 point center playing alongside like Olofsson and Jordan Greenway. So yeah. I think if placed in the right situation with Mittelstadt, I think he can make a lot of money. If placed in the wrong situation, I just don't think his next contract will be that big. So I'm going to go a 7 for him.
Okay. And a lot of these, like the pressure isn't necessarily like, like it's outside pressure kind of thing, like things they can't control, because like he can't necessarily, I mean, he can, but he can't in a sense of like control where he is in the lineup. Like you can control where you're in the lineup. It's, you know, just work hard and produce. And it's just like, well, just sometimes it doesn't work out that way, or sometimes we want to spread the wealth. So I'd say around 7. Yeah, I would say maybe 8, just because it's like it is your contract year and it's like he's 24 years old and it's like, you know, time's ticking here. So like I think just for that sense, I would probably put it at an 8. JJ Paterka. I'm this one I'm interested in. I've been licking my chops on this one. What do you think?
I'm going to go with a 4. I would say there's like no risk with him or no pressure with him, just because he's just a great prospect, does everything right, seems to obviously fit in with the team. I do think there's some pressure, though, where if the Sabres underperform this season and they try to get a little crazy with it and make like a splash trade, maybe he's a guy that, which I would not, but maybe he is a guy that they try to include in that. I think there's also going to be a little pressure from the fact that he was just incredible at the World Championships this past May. I mean, forward of the tournament. So like, what, 22 years old? That's pretty remarkable. So I think I think there's going to be pressure on him for him to take that next step this year, but I don't think it's enough to like push him above that five range.
He is 21 years old, actually. January 14th, too. That's crazy. Yeah, right. Yeah, I didn't expect
that. All the talent at the World Championships, he was the best forward.
Crazy, right? Yeah. I'm going six, just because he just needs to follow up the campaign he had. It was decent. He had 32 points in 77 games, but there was a time, like, I think he really buried a ton of points in the beginning of the season and like, I think towards the end, but there was a really long period they had to set him down, which, like, frankly, he's a young player, you kind of need to do sometimes. It was his first full season in the NHL, not blaming him for that, but if he doesn't show progress this season, it's going to be like, well, maybe we need to reconsider what we think of him as a prospect as a whole. I think I might be grasping at straws a bit here, like, you know, reaching a bit, but just understand, like, 12 goals, 20 assists, that's pretty good. If he rolls in with 10 goals and 19 assists, it's good. Like, if you don't see a progress at all, that's a problem. That's a pretty significant problem, too, where you're thinking, oh, he could be a top guy, top six player and stuff like that. Whereas if he kind of rolls in with, like, a cruddy year this year, production-wise, and he kind of has, like, a pretty ugly lull during the season, which last year, correct me if I'm wrong, it lasted a pretty long time.
I scratched a few times, if I remember.
Like, I really like him as a season. I really like him as a person and a player. So I don't want it to happen at all, but I think there is some pressure there. I would say there's a little bit. I might be putting a little bit too much there, but it's also because I have high expectations of him because I know what kind of player he can be. I think he's very good, and he brings a dynamic. He's like a below the dots kind of skill player instead of just, you know, needs open ice and time and space kind of thing. I think he can kind of work in tighter, and he has the foot speed and the work rate. I think that's something you mentioned earlier. I think that's something he has where, like, I'm not calling any other Sabres lazy or anything like that, but there's levels to it, and I think he has a really good, you know, motor. The same thing with Peyton Krebs. I think he has a good motor too, so it's not all about the motor, but at the same time, it's, you know, it means something. You know, and let's not look past that. So, I would say around five or six for JJ Paterka. This is a fun one.
Henry Jokiharju, I would go
12. I think I'm going to go 12.
I think 10 for me. Yeah. I don't know if I'll go over the 10 range.
Yeah. No, 10 for sure, yeah.
I think the pressure's definitely there with him. I mean, we saw Lyubushkin get the boot, and he's a guy the Sabres just brought in last offseason for a 2-year deal. So
yeah.
I don't think anyone's safe. The fact that he was here before the current regime, I think, makes him even less safe. And I also don't really know what his next NHL deal will look like. If it's on another team, I don't think it'll be anything too crazy. And he's really on that point of his career where you could either carve out a career as a depth defenseman, or you could end up by the wayside and end up back in Europe in a few years. But I do think he has the talent to stick around the NHL. I don't know if it'll be in the Sabres. I would imagine probably not. But I think there's definitely pressure there, and he's got just so many opportunities. I mean, just looking at the left-handed defenseman on his roster to just be a complimentary guy, that if he just takes a hold of one of those opportunities, it could just change his entire outcome of his career.
Yeah, definitely 10. One of the reasons, like you just mentioned, you've had every opportunity. I will say, we knew this coming forward. He was a high floor, low ceiling player. That shouldn't surprise us. And I've always viewed him as a top six, as in your third pairing defenseman. I don't view him as a top four defenseman at all. And anyone that was advocating for it was only by circumstance. And if you truly thought that he was a top four defenseman, I'm sorry, I have a bridge to sell you, because it's just not the case. I'm sorry, it's just not. Like, I don't know. I don't know why I'm getting oddly passionate about this, but I saw it was months and months ago. I can't remember who it was, but I remember someone saying like, no, he's a top four defenseman. I'm like, no, he's not. No, he's not. And I think a lot more people would agree with me than not. But if you think that at this point, I'm sorry. I don't know what else to tell you. They brought in Eric Johnson and Connor Clifton. Yes, it definitely helps him that LaBouche can get the boot. But for all the reasons you mentioned as well, I agree with everything. This regime doesn't have any loyalty to you. Like, they like him for sure, but like, is he a vibes guy? Is he? Are we sure about that? I don't think so. What, is he there to keep Ukko Pekka Luukkonen happy because they're both from Finland? No, they don't give a crap.
I think he's a vibes guy.
Do you? Okay.
I just remember that video of him with Dominic Cahoon where he's interviewing him and asked like if he's a drums or flats guy, and neither of them had any idea like what that even meant. And then he's like, one bone or two bones.
I'm not trying to. Sorry, I should not attack his personality like that. I'm not trying to, but it's just he's more stoic. That's for sure. Probably more quiet as well. It's probably, you know, maybe just the culture in general. But
Scandinavia vibes, yeah, or Nordic vibes.
Like, I'm not trying to, sorry, I might have been a little bit too harsh on him, but it's just, this is 100% pressure is on. I don't know anyone on this roster besides the goalies. If you take away goaltenders, I don't know anyone else that has more pressure on them than Henry Okiharju. To be fair, let's actually put him in a top six role, in a fifth or sixth defenseman role with a partner that he can play well with, because we saw him play well with Scandella for, you know, however brief of time that was. But if you actually find a partner for him, Ryan Johnson, Riley Stillman, someone that he can actually build a bond or connection with on that back end and just play solid minutes when he's out there, and penalty kill. You have to penalty kill. If you are going to be on the third pairing, you have to penalty kill. If he can do that effectively as well, then the pressure starts to get lifted. Other than that, it is a scalding hot 10 for me. It's time, bud. It's make or break season. We have to start being harder on players now because the expectation has risen. It is playoffs. I'm sorry. Unless things go completely haywire and everyone's injured and we're rolling out half the Amerx team for a good majority of the season, I'm sorry, it is time. There's no more waiting. It's time. The team is still young and they will still build, and it won't be the end of the organization. This isn't their last hurrah trying to make the playoffs. They'll have shot after shot at this because the team's young. But you also have a lot of guys on lower contracts. And at some point, that's going to catch up to you, and you're going to have to start making tough decisions. You're going to lose some pretty freaking good players, and they're probably going to start with guys like Olofsson, who can fill the net but might not necessarily have everything else in his toolbox. Or guys like Henry Okiharju, who's definitely an NHL defenseman, don't get me wrong, but it's time for the team to make it. And so we need to start holding these players to a higher standard, regardless of who it is. And, you know, don't go nuts, but realize that it's crunch time, boys. And it is, the season's rapidly approaching. And like we mentioned last, I think it was the beginning of last episode, you have to get off to a good start. You won't make the playoffs from it, but you can certainly lose the playoffs. If you start off 2-8 in your first 10, 3-7, that's tough, man. That is a tough uphill climb from the beginning of the season. It's go time. You know, I'm fired up for the, I'm excited, but I'm also, I've been patient. I think we have all been patient. I said playoffs weren't going to happen last year. Even when they were pushing, I was like, look, I would love for them to make playoffs. I will be disappointed if they don't, but I don't expect it. They are just too young. It's just they need another year. I'm not singing that tune anymore. I'm not making excuses for him anymore. This is it. And so I know you might have some comments on that, but let's add a couple names into that. What kind of pressure do you think from the fan base would be on Granato and Adams this season? Not internal. We know that they have Pegula's faith. And to be fair, I think they should. You can't keep the carousel going but from fans, what do you think?
That's an interesting question because there's like such a variety of fans. I mean, there's the people that like kind of loosely follow the team, and I think they're just excited to be competitive again. And then there's like the sickos that are like, oh, remember when like Eric Bergdorfer was on the team, like guys like that. I think the pressure with them is probably like a seven, I want to say, just because these guys are just so thirsty, these fans, just for the playoffs, that the ones that have been loyal to this team for so long, the ones that are tweeting about this team every single night, the fans that have been watching every single game for the past decade plus, they're just ready for the playoffs now. And I think there'll be some people going off the rails a little bit if they happen to miss it this year. Internally, I'd imagine that's definitely different, but
yeah,
I think with some fans, I think they'll get a little frustrated with the coach and the GM if they don't make it to the playoffs this season. And I don't even think there's any way to escape that. I think even if Adams made moves and the Sabres missed the playoffs, there'd still be heat because people would be upset that he didn't make the right moves.
Yeah, so they weren't the right moves. You didn't make any moves. Okay, yeah. Well, I made moves. Well, they weren't the right ones. Yeah, I totally, yeah, agreed. So I'm trying to think of like, I might have been a little harsh, but I'm trying to set the baseline of like, this is where I believe fans' expectations should be. And I've tried to be fair with it because last year, like I said, I said they weren't going to make it. I'm not trying to tell you what to think, but this is just where I believe, you know, where the fan base should be. And other people will have their own opinions of where they think, you know, the fan base should be, but that's where I think they should. Of course, support the players. Always, you know, they're every single night they're out there trying their best. Like if you see someone completely dogging it and not trying, absolutely get on them, but I'm not going to get on the players as much. I think it's time to start looking at, you know, not even Granato necessarily, because he's trying to implement the, you know, the systems, and he's not the one necessarily out there. Like if the guys go out there and play a bad game, you know, it's not on the necessarily on the coach. Like if they aren't prepared and ready, versus, you know, players just not having a good night, like that's going to happen. And there is some ownership players have to take, because at the end of the day, they are the ones on the ice. Kevin Adams and Don Granato are not the ones playing, but I don't know. I mean, I've said this before, I'll say it again. This is like, before for Kevin Adams was the kind of the easy part. The Jack Eichel trade, not easy. I'll give you that. But you just had to maintain, you know, strip away some of the, you know, the baggage on the team. This is where you need to start adding effective pieces and progressively getting less and less cap, because you have to keep resigning these young guys that are coming up. You want to take advantage when they have these lower contracts. It's the same thing with Josh Allen. I think the biggest, you know, I'm not a Bills, you know, analyst or commentator by any stretch of the imagination, but I watch it just like everyone else, big fan. When they, not last year, but the year before, when Josh was on his, what, last year of his rookie contract, and the Bills did not go for it at the trade deadline for whatever reason it was, whether it was money or whatever, and it was a huge missed opportunity. I don't want the Sabres to do the same thing. I think it is definitely a different situation, because not to get too high and, you know, deep into Bill stuff, I kind of think they're on the downslope, if you ask me. They're always going to have a shot with Josh Allen, but the Sabres are on the upslope. I think the Bills might be on the downslope. Could be completely wrong about that. Again, not a Bills commentator, but that's where I'm at. You know, I feel like that's fair. Would you consider that fair? I know I've been ranting a bit, and I definitely think if you don't agree with me with how much I've just talked in the past 10 minutes, you're pulling your hair out at this point, but that's just where I'm at, man. Like I genuinely believe that this is the year to actually put pressure on them, because last year I was so, you know, like, look, it would be great, but I'm just trying to be fair. But now I think it's fair to be tough on them. So where are you kind of at with that before we get into, we're going to end it with some more RJ memories and just, you know, just talking, you know, hanging out and off script stuff. So last little thing about expectations and, you know, just where this upcoming season's at, because it's going to be upon us very quickly here.
Yeah, it's definitely interesting. I think the different thing with hockey versus other sports is that your top prospects are not a part of the team. I know baseball is the same thing, but with like the NFL and NBA, your prospects are already in the organization, already playing games, or in the NHL, your prospects can be playing in Wenatchee, Washington, or Sweden. So it's going to be interesting. I think the way you look at how you think the Sabres should go all in depends on how you view their current core versus how you view their young prospects. I personally am more a fan of the younger prospects. I just think Zach Benson, I think he's going to be unreal. I think Devin Levi, once he hits his prime, I think he's going to be a Vezina candidate. So that's the tricky thing for me, is because I think you have to balance going all in versus making sure you still have the ammo to go all in when I actually think the Sabres will be at their peak competitive window, which I think is still a few years away. So the hope is definitely that there's enough here right now to push the Sabres into the playoffs and play a competitive series, because then I think you'll be able to get away with ownership and the fans of not having to move too much of your futures, just because I'm so confident in these futures with guys like Jiří Kulík and Zach Benson and Devin Levi, that I really think the Sabres' peak window is still a few years away. But that doesn't mean that they can't be competitive now. They could be good enough now to win a playoff series or two if everything goes right for them and the pieces continue to develop. So it's going to be an interesting season. I mean, the discourse throughout the season will continue to evolve and develop, but I just looking forward to watching the Sabres team play. I think they have a real chance to push for a playoff spot, and that's something that I don't think I've been able to say since maybe 2012-13 in that lockout shortened season. I think that was probably the last time.
Through the ups and through the downs, it will be a fun season. I can pretty confidently say I don't think it's going to be a dud of a season, whether they make it or not, and whether we're upset or not. Like, we're going to be passionate and have plenty to talk about, a lot of good times, some bad, ugly times, maybe. Hopefully not, especially when it comes to, players' health and things of that nature. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to it. No matter the expectations, I will always look forward to a Sabres season. Now, I'd like to paint a picture and just kind of bring people back. I'm pushing 30. Going to be, half a year away from turning 30. So, kind of take, the timeline that I'm maybe telling a story in with that perspective. I just remember, man, like those days, like mid 2000s, coming back from what before I moved away from Buffalo for, half my childhood. Just like come on like a cool night, maybe like a Friday or on a school night or something like that. Go to school, you come back, it's that crisp fall air, you come home, you get dinner with the family, you're hanging out, and you flick on the Sabres game, and it's the Empire Sports Network. You got Mike Robitaille with, he was the real one that I remember. There's a couple others that were definitely on there consistently that I just don't remember. And then you have, Jim Lorenz, and just like what he was just such a perfect complement to Rick Jeanneret. And then you had Rick, and it was just, then you would, maybe you were watching some of the Sabres game, then you'd go to hockey practice and you guys were all talking about it. And I want to be like Mike Pekka. I want to be like Maxim Afanaginov. I want to be like whomever. I mean, those are just the memories that they've just stuck with me for years and years, but they really came flying back with the news of RJ. And again, my condolences to his friends, family, to the entire Sabre. I feel horribly for just the entire Sabres fan base, for the broadcasters, kind of, I guess I would say, like, group of them, what is it? The community. There you go. There's a group of people, a community. It's just everyone lost something that day. And it's just, I just think of the good times and just the just like the guttural, just from the soul, what a hit by Campbell on RJ Umberger when I was in Philadelphia to, again, being a little bit more transparent with some of the people that have made it this far into the episode, like when I moved to Philadelphia, and the first year we were there, it was a tough transition. It really was for the entire family, including myself. It was very difficult. I'll just say that. And so when the Sabres were playing Philly, and just it felt like almost like my family kind of against everything that was happening to us in Philly, kind of thing. And so when Brian Campbell steps up and nails him, and you hear RJ go, "What a hit by Campbell," and he's just going wild, I lost it. Absolutely lost it. I was screaming, running around my house. It just helped. And RJ was just such a big part of that. Like, it genuinely helped me as a person. I can't speak for the rest of my family, but for me, something about that series and something about that moment and RJ being such a big part of that, it helped way more than I can even put into words. So that's a memory that I have of RJ, where it's just, it hit just on a different level. It was personal to me. I'm sure anyone listening can maybe relate to something, you know, that really tough time, and RJ made it better, or the Sabres made it better. That was a tough time for me. It really was. I mean, it genuinely makes me emotional to this day. And so, you know, I just want to thank RJ for being who he was, and I was hoping maybe you had some kind of story as well to kind of tie in the rest of this episode and get me from not shedding tears on air.
Yeah, I think just with Rick Jeanneret, just growing up, I just remember my earliest memories of sports were the Sabres were a pretty bad team. The Bills were a pretty bad team. I was born in 97, so kind of the first season I remember is like 2002, 03. Then 03, 04, they bring on guys like Briere and Drury, the lockout season. And then 05, 06, 06, 07, I mean, those years as a young kid had to be some of the best years of my life for my favorite hockey team to be contending for a Stanley Cup. I mean, it's something that I never even imagined. I was just happy just watching this team just exist. I never really expected them to win or not. I was just happy just watching the Sabres being the Sabres. And when they started winning, I really got to appreciate the greatness of Rick Jeanneret. I remember that overtime goal against Ottawa in the playoffs where he's saying, "These guys are good, scary good." I remember watching that game with my parents thinking, "Oh, wow, this team really has a chance to win a Stanley Cup." And I think a lot of people today in Buffalo, because it's hard to believe that these seasons were already 17, 16 years ago. So there's like kids in college right now, high school, elementary school, that really never got to experience like that type of Sabres hockey and like the type of greatness that Rick Jeanneret had. Just those Sabres teams, I mean, it was almost like a religion then, except instead of going to service like once a week for an hour, like you were on your TV at the game for 3 hours, like three nights a week, every fall, winter, and spring. People never even missed a game back then. I mean, you could go to a game, like be on TV at the game, and then the next day at school, you'd have 300 people coming up to you saying they saw you on TV at a Sabres game. Like the whole community was tuned in. And I think just those memories of Sabres hockey, they're so special to me. And I think it's probably the main reason why I'm here, like right now, like doing a Sabres podcast, like writing about the Sabres, like through some of the worst years in Sabres history. I've never stopped writing about the Sabres, posting about the Sabres, following this team. And I think it's just those memories of like those 05, 06, 06, 07 seasons when you could kind of believe in that anything was possible with this team. And I think Rick Jeanneret, he was the voice behind that. And it was just such a special moment, not just in watching sports for me, but really just in my life.
Yeah, and I think everyone can relate to that. They have their own memories that they'll cherish forever. You know, I want to thank Walt for consistently doing this episode, this podcast with me. It really means a lot. You know, we just do this for the love of it and just love talking about the Sabres. For the people that have, one, just listen to any portions of our podcast, especially to the people that made it all the way here, we thank you very, very much. We hope you enjoy. We'll continue to do this until we have no listeners. And I think just to end it, I know I usually hand it over to Walt, but I think I'll take it this time. RJ, you're gone, but you'll never, ever be forgotten. We'll catch you on the next one.